Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Spencer, Uppercase Print, and The Village Detective, A Song Cycle. Wherever do you find these? Hi, David, how are you?
Isn't that something, Jill? I'm fine. How are you this week?
I, once again, refuse to complain. And Spencer, I mean, Spencer's obvious, but the other ones,
Well, you say, where do I find them? Actually, a couple of these will require some seeking out. This week, because these are really interesting films, we've got one which is, you know, a big movie and it's playing all over the place, and that is Spencer. The other two are rarer items, but I really like to, from time to time, give some attention to these items that don't have great big ads in every big city newspaper, but that are really worthwhile. In fact, one of the things about movies like two of the films today, Uppercase Print and The Village Detective, A Song Cycle, is that I am just so delighted that movies as sort of challenging as this and unusual as this that break the usual patterns actually can get released in American commercial circuits, whether it's nowadays either in theaters or online. So that just really makes me feel a teensy little bit of hope for the future of American film and culture, because again, these are challenging movies, but I think they're really worth seeking out for people who want something off the beaten path. However, let's begin with the beaten path. Let's begin with Spencer, which again is a pretty big movie, and it's in theaters all over the place. And it was directed by Pablo Larraín, who is a very, very interesting a Chilean filmmaker, but he's really now an international filmmaker very much. He's made a whole lot of movies going back to 2006 when his first film came out, and some of them are thrillers like Tony Manero, and some of them are very political, a movie he made called No, N-O, back almost 10 years ago, very political movie. He's made a couple of biopics in the past, one called Neruda, which deals with the poet Pablo Neruda, one about Jacqueline Kennedy, simply called Jackie. So again, different kinds of movies. Spencer is another one of his biopics of sort, because the Spencer of the title is Princess Diana. That was, of course, was her family name before she became Princess Diana. And Princess Diana's been in my conscience a little bit in recent times, because I've really, really, really enjoyed watching that terrific series on TV, The Crown, in which she comes on in some of the later episodes that have come out so far. Very, very interesting. And I think The Crown is a marvelously done series. I've really enjoyed it. And I've certainly enjoyed the parts to do with Princess Diana and with all the other people in the royal family. And so Spencer is very different from that, the movie Spencer. But that's one reason why Princess Diana may be in some people's minds as well as mine because of that. In any case, the movie Spencer, written by Stephen Knight but directed by the very fine Pablo Larraín, deals with her during one very brief period of her unfortunately brief life. We have a movie that takes place on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and Boxing Day, which they have in England, and she is off visiting with her family, the royal family, and the movie starts with a sort of metaphorical incident. She is driving in her car. She is on her way to this big Christmas season reunion with members of the royal family, etc., and she's lost. She's totally lost. These are the days before everybody had GPS. And so there she is, and she's out in the countryside, and she can't find her way, and she goes into a restaurant along the road to ask, hey, where am I? Can somebody tell me where I am? And everybody's staring at her because it's Princess Diana. So that's the way it starts, and this introduces the Princess Diana who this movie will be about, which is a person who is psychologically lost in all kinds of ways. And yes, the movie does focus on these very, very deep troubles she had. She was, as The Crown makes clear, and I think a lot of us know anyway, she was not a psychologically stable person, and being a part of the royal family circus did not help her psychological stability at all. And this movie deals very forthrightly with this, not in a lurid way, I would say. In fact, I think in a very responsible and even sort of tame way compared with how things might have been shown. But it deals with her eating disorder, her bulimia, her apparent real unhappiness in the world, and her efforts to try to find some kind of contentment or some kind of just stability moment to moment, and just failing at that. There are things in the movie which it's not clear whether they're actually happening or not. There's a moment when she deliberately injures, apparently she's a cutter, apparently she sometimes cuts herself as a way of self-punishment. And there's a moment in the movie when we see her do that, but then a little while later, the arm where she did the cutting appears to be perfectly okay. So it's not clear whether that really happened or not. And there's other things in the movie like that, where it's not really clear exactly what is going on, whether it's real or not, but it doesn't matter. Or rather, it matters totally, because she in her own mind, I think, is not always totally clear as to where reality is leaving off and her own psychological tensions are taking over. And the movie is very sensitive, I think, and very interesting in dealing with that. It makes her into a real, fully rounded human being, a very troubling one. But since she was a real person and she really had this very public life, it's quite fascinating to see all this worked out by such intelligent filmmakers in such an intelligent film. Now, I haven't even mentioned yet who plays Princess Diana. Princess Diana is played by Kristen Stewart, and yes, it's a terrific performance. She is very, very persuasive. She is gorgeous, she is charismatic, and she also does the troubled personality extremely well. Another important female part is played by the very fine Sally Hawkins, who plays a kind of a confidant of Princess Diana. Always a pleasure to see Sally Hawkins, and she is wonderful in this. And I'm going to mention one more member of the cast, and that is one of the great British character actors of all time, Timothy Spall. He plays the sort of the chief of staff in this royal residence, and he is very stiff and very proper. And Timothy Spall, in his older age, is developing one of the longest faces. I mean, literally long from top to bottom in the movies today. But he's just always fascinating to look at, and he gives a wonderful, dignified, eccentric performance. Terrific casting of the movie. And one more thing I really have to mention, which is the music of the film, which for me is maybe the most impressive thing about the entire film. It has a very, very interesting and unusual music track. The music was composed by one Johnny Greenwood. It's very expressionistic. It's not particularly melodic, and I felt that it just lent so much tone and tension to this movie. So, Spencer, it's a really, really good movie. It's not a perfect movie. It has its dull spots. It has its little confusions, I think. But it's one of the better movies that this year has given us, and I really do recommend it. Spencer, especially if you have any interest in the British royal family or in the kind of lives that unhappy royal people sometimes have to leave, it's a movie one should really see. Really quite a piece of work, which, again, a wonderful performance by Kristen Stewart. Our second movie for today comes from Romania. It is called Uppercase Print, an unusual title, and it was directed by the very fine Romanian filmmaker Radu Jude. And he is a very talented filmmaker, and as I've mentioned before on our show, Jill, Romanian film, Radu Jude and various others have been having a renaissance in recent years. There's been a real sort of Romanian new wave, and there's been a number of filmmakers who have been making just extraordinary work, which some of it really is getting out into the international movie exhibition circuit, and Uppercase Print is one of those. It is, as I said earlier, it is a challenging movie, but a really, really, really interesting movie. It's well over 2 hours long, and I was just riveted by it almost all the way. It tells the story of a Romanian teenager who, roughly 40 years ago, got in real trouble for writing graffiti. That's where the title comes from, Uppercase Print. Big graffiti messages protesting the dictatorial government of the dictator at the time, Nicolae Ceaușescu. Now, he was a notorious and very, very bad dictator back in the old days when Soviet communism ruled that part of Europe. And this young Romanian teenager, his name was Mugur Călinescu, he wrote these large messages, these protest graffiti on walls, and was, yes, caught, arrested, brought in by the authorities, and then some pretty bad things happen to him. The movie tells the story of this teenager, but it tells it in a really unusual way. It does not tell it in the usual way of a dramatically enacted melodrama or something like that. In fact, it's the opposite of that. The people say their lines, mostly facing the camera or facing each other, standing in fairly wooden postures, just sort of standing there with their arms at their sides and speaking their lines as if they were reciting the lines of a play. Because I think that one of Radu Jude's points in making this movie is to indicate that people's behavior in those kinds of dictatorial circumstances, in that kind of a regime, in that kind of a country, you can't speak from your heart. You can't speak from your own thoughts. You've got to speak the heart from the heart and then soul that have been given to you, that have been ascribed to you by the authorities. So the people say their lines as if they had been programmed to say their lines. It's beautifully done, and I found it very, very interesting. But you have these people not acting in the usual naturalistic, psychological way that we are accustomed to seeing in almost all dramatic movies. Rather, we're seeing them speaking their lines as if they had been programmed, because part of the point of this movie is that people have been programmed and are programmed in regimes like that, and there still are regimes like that in many parts of the world today. The other big element of this movie is actual footage from Romania at the time, and this is documentary footage, and it is all different kinds of stuff. Snippets of TV shows, snippets of people just living their ordinary lives, all kinds of entertainment that people go to, and this is all interwoven, so we're constantly alternating in this film back and forth between, on the one hand, the people enacting this drama of this teenager who is caught and interrogated and in terrible trouble, and his family ends up enmeshed in this trouble and so forth. And on the other hand, this documentary material, which I found very, very lively and exciting to watch. So we're constantly going back and forth between these two things. Neither one becomes boring because we're always switching back and forth. And to my mind, at least, the most important point being made by the documentary footage, a lot of which deals with children and young people, is how the programming that we get from our societies is inflicted on us from the earliest age. We see all these clips of little kids being taught to sing songs about how wonderful their country is and how wonderful their ruler is and how wonderful their leader is and all this stuff, other stuff. It's all just fascinating how we are programmed from the earliest ages by so many forces in our society. And Radu Jude's movie, Uppercase Print, really brings this out, I think, in a very lively, entertaining way. So again, this is a totally unconventional movie. It's not entertaining in the usual ways, but I found it riveting, and it has all kinds of important points to make, which I think are still very relevant today when there are so many parts of the world in which freedom still does not flourish at all. I really recommend Uppercase Print by Radu Jude. You may have to search a little bit to find it, but it's a terrific movie. And our final film for today, Jill, The Village Detective, A Song Cycle, is by a filmmaker with a really distinctive style, Bill Morrison. What Bill Morrison's specialty is what's called in the trade found footage, which is to say it's film footage that he did not photograph himself, but was gleaned from some other source, from some other place. Footage that was maybe shot for some totally different purpose, maybe thrown away, that Bill Morrison has found and repurposed. And The Village Detective, A Song Cycle, very much fits into that career goal of his, that career project of his. So here's the story, and this is real life stuff. A Soviet film from the late 1960s was found in the Atlantic Ocean. Off the coast of Iceland, a fishing vessel hauled it up in their nets, and instead of just throwing it back in the water or something, it actually got into the hands of people who were cinema authorities, who managed to open up the can that the film was in and found the film could still be salvaged. So we have this Soviet movie that was lying in the water for a very, very long time, but in a can so that it was not totally destroyed, and then it was rehabilitated, and the thing is, and this is part of Bill Morrison's total style, the film was salvageable but was really, really decayed and damaged, and that is what Bill Morrison loves, and it's what I love too. Bill Morrison loves to put up on the big screen film footage which is damaged, destroyed, and all the more gorgeous for that. All of these swirling imperfections and parts where the whole frame has been wiped out by decay and the forces of bacteriological and chemical chemical decay that afflict film when it's been not properly stored, and in this case, the opposite of properly stored. That's what we see. So this film turns out to star a very, very beloved Soviet actor named Mikhail Zarov. And what we see are clips from this film and clips from a whole lot of other films by Mikhail Zarov, some of them very much better preserved. And the movie is a sort of a collage. That's why it's called a song cycle of material from this film that was fished out of the ocean and from other films by Mikhail Zarov. We find out about his life and career. We learn things about him. We see what a fine, beloved actor he was, how troubled his career was in some ways. But mostly, we see this marvelous film footage from old, damaged movies, which just look spectacular. It's like seeing ghosts swarm across the screen. To me, watching a Bill Morrison film is often a sort of mystical experience, almost. His greatest film is a movie called Dikasia, made many years ago, which consists almost entirely of totally damaged film footage. This one has some film footage in it which is not totally damaged, and you really do get a good sense of what it was like to be a big Soviet movie star back a few decades ago. It's a very interesting historical movie, but mostly it's a magnificent aesthetic experience. Seek it out. If you love cinema, you will love The Village Detective, A Song Cycle. So that is my somewhat off-the-beaten-path story this week, Joe.
For which we thank you. As ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Spencer, Uppercase Prince, and The Village Detective, A Song Cycle.